This is Brock and Saul.
Brock Heward and Marcus. Sorry about just
Mike.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
You were not exactly Joe Cap there in the pocket.
Presented by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Saul.
Well, it felt like all of a sudden yesterday, Brock, it all came rushing back for a lot of people. Some scars that had maybe not healed all the way over were reopened. I don't know. It's funny. I wasn't upset when I saw that Jordan Montgomery signed with the Arizona Diamondbacks, but it seems like a lot of people were, and it kind of felt like you were on that list.
Oh, interesting. I thought you were going to go to the Pat Chen news.
Oh, yeah, that too.
Justin and I were back here thinking the same, that we thought that's what you were talking about.
Exactly. I'm ready to quote Poison right here. The wound heals, but that
wound's not going to heal. I mean, they lost their program. It's terrible.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Very good. I'll shift gears mentally because I really thought that's the direction you were going there. I think with the woo news and how fragile your rotation is and the chance to just add 1 year and just throw cash at a situation that doesn't cost you any of these prospects that are flying off the charts and everything else. Yeah, I thought the Montgomery signing was, and it's a lot of money. I get it. It is $25 million. That's not my money.
And it's really, it's a two-year $50 million deal. I mean, with 10 starts, that's going to toll for the next year.
Gotcha. So it's an investment. Just as Snell would have been an investment. Is that an investment that I would have made if, solely being cash? I sure would have loved to have seen that. As I texted you, would this have just silenced and put to bed any of the end of last season? Would this have helped? And I know Mr. Stanton has been on King 5 with Paul Sylvie. I know he's going to be on our station, I believe, tomorrow as well. And and I know that he wants teams and from a budget standpoint to be good year in and year out, not too different than the team right across Royal Brougham and the way that Schneider and the Seahawks have operated for all these years as well. But yeah, I thought that there could be an immense amount of goodwill created to just put to bed any of this thought that the you won't spend to do everything possible and spend the cash on hand or even not on hand to just give yourself every opportunity.
Yeah, it's funny. I understand that thinking. It did not dawn on me yesterday with Jordan Montgomery. Like, it just, would he be a
just him the player?
He's a good player. He's a good pitcher. He certainly is. Last 2 years, he's been very good, and he was lights out once he got to Texas last year. I mean, like, he's sort of put on a show at the end of the year, and I don't think it's an accident that he went until, March 26th before he signed a deal that was only for 1 or 2 years rather than that big 6-7 year deal that I'm sure he was looking for. Like, I don't think that's an accident. But I kind of agree with what Passan said yesterday.
I mean, but that's not going to cost anything. Like that's not a difficult guy to find. And
well, I'm sorry, that was right after I said to him, "Do you think that they need to add a pitcher?" Mm-hmm. And he looked and sounded in horror and shock as he said, "Do you?" And I was like, "No, not really." And he was like, "Good, right?" And then no more than a few hours later, a pitcher goes to the National League and people are freaking out. Jeff literally just said, "No, they don't need to do that." I don't know. I do find myself a little torn. I think that there's probably a way you could have fit him in, right? I mean, like, what do you do if you sign him and then, it turns out Brian Wu's just fine? You're going to put Wu back in the minor leagues? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's possible, right, that either Wu or Miller completely disappoints this year and needs to be sent to the minor leagues anyway. They haven't pitched a whole year in the big leagues. A lot of the excitement around the Mariners' rotation involves a projection of those two guys building off of what they did last year, and that doesn't always happen.
Yep.
Certainly, it doesn't always happen in a linear way. So could they use another pitcher? Yes. If they were to go and try and buy some of that goodwill, though, Brock, I don't think it's $25 million on another starter, especially a guy that lasted this long. I think it's waiting until you've started to win some games early this season and then going all in and investing more in a team that's already winning, whether it's at the trade deadline or before that, to try to bring in what actually ails this team. And maybe down the road, it will end up being starting pitching. You almost always need more of it. But I think I'm with Jeff that the starting pitching for this team to add is probably more along the margins. And that's just not the best way to build build a roster for them.
Yeah, right, Luke Arkins put out a tweet yesterday. I saw that you responded to it. And it was how many starters, different starters, mm-hmm. did each team use last year? Now, it's a little, you know, you tweeted him and said, can you add a little context? Because how much of these are just bullpen starts? How many of these are bullpen starters that, you know, you just for whatever reason, some were. But, you know, Oakland's at the very top of that list with 24 different starters.
Right.
The very best team, the healthiest team in all of baseball was Toronto. Toronto and Washington started eight different starters.
So you're going to need eight. My guess is, though, if they started eight, one or two of those were probably bullpen starts.
League average was 13 and a half. We know the Mariners were 13. We know a bunch of that was injury with Marco and Robbie and you know, a few different bullpen starts and everything else.
So let's assume that if the average is 13, let's call it 13. Mm-hmm. And let's assume how many of those 13 would you guess are usually bullpen starts?
Probably three.
Three or four, I probably would have said. But my guess is you probably need 8 to 10 starters to get through a season.
Yes.
They look at it and they say, we've got six right off the bat. Right? Where are those other couple going to come from?
Yep.
And, you know, I don't know. I don't know where those are going to come from right now. Maybe it'll be Levi Stout. Maybe it'll be the kid that Logan Evans, I believe Logan is Evans. His name. Maybe Logan Evans will be one of those Logan guys. Evans. Okay, uh-huh. that gets you to what, seven or eight? So
maybe Austin Voth.
Yeah, I think I was correct. I think it's Voth. So right, maybe it'll be Austin Voth. Yep. So, all right, like, and then maybe you're going to acquire somebody as the season goes. Maybe it is a Tommy Malone type. Maybe it's Casey Lawrence who comes up and makes a couple of spot starts. So, you know, there's your eight or nine. Yep. That doesn't get you to 13, but if you have a couple of bullpen days in there and Trent Thornton starts a game or two, you know what I mean? Yep. Sometimes a guy comes in. Some of those Mariner starts were at the end of the year as they were just trying to piece it together. So, I don't know.
And who knows? You know, the biggest part of it all is who knows how this team plays and operates and what April and May and into June look like. We've always heard this from Jerry, and he's not alone in this in baseball. His first 50 games, you evaluate what you are and who you are. And you like a lot of who you are, and the strength of this team, and very much so, is the starting pitching.
I also think, if this was July 1st and Montgomery was available, I'd get it.
And you're in it.
And you're in it, and you feel like, hey, you know what? Unfortunately, we're in it, but Miller or Wu just hasn't done exactly what we've needed them to do or we've been squeaking by. Okay, fine. Mm-hmm. But I do think that there is something to the need to actually give your guys the opportunity to go out and compete. Every team has some holes. Every team has some issues. I don't know that right now, as much as I am concerned about the depth of the rotation, I don't know that I could advocate going out and spending the money especially because I think you're going to eventually need it at third, maybe at first, maybe at the corner outfield spots. I mean, I think you've got three or four potential concerns there that I want to make sure you got the flexibility to fix down the line. Yeah.
The last thing I would just say on this is it's just simply cash, right? I mean, it is just that kind of safety net. And with your bullpen and a couple of the arms on the back end of it that are banged up, right? With now a fragility, you know, Emerson Hancock slides right in and now you got your five guys, but now you're one tweak, you're one injury, you're one more shutdown away from getting into a little danger zone for the strength of your team. The strength 100%. Of your team is going to be your pitching.
Yep.
And that is where, if you're going to make an argument, say, okay, and I'm sure they bantered
I don't think you can take that bet on March 27th. I think you can do that once you get to the trade deadline, but I think that's a tough bet to make today. Now, flip side of this, Mariners last year spent around $9.5 million more than the Diamondbacks, who, as we know, went to the World Series. With this signing, I think Arizona is going to end up spending about $26 million more than Seattle is going to this year. Which team is better? If there is one other team I'm going to be watching this year, it's the Diamondbacks, right? You made a couple of deals with them. They went out and spent some extra money. I'm very interested to see whether or not they're going to be
our guys.
Better.
We know Gambo in the afternoon down there.
Well,
we got all sorts of entanglements.
Playing in two very good divisions, which is interesting, right? The arms race in the NL West was pretty crazy this offseason. The Giants went big. The Dodgers, of course. The Padres remade themselves. And then the Diamondbacks. So, yeah, I am sort of fascinated to watch these two teams this year and see how it all works out for them. What I'm not fascinated about is anybody texting in with the name Trevor Bauer. Thanks, but no thanks. I'll pass, and so are the Mariners. All right, up next, let's give you everything you need to know. You talked about Pat Chunbrock. You thought that's where I was going to go. Want your opinion on it. What happened, and why is he in Washington now? That's next on Brock and Salk.
need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Spring is finally over, Brock. It is time for the games that count. The Mariners wrap up their spring training with another win yesterday, 7-6 in San Diego. Julio doing damage.
Here's the pitch. Julio swinging a drive deep to left field out to the Brown building out there, and goodbye baseball. Out to the base of the Western Metal Supply Company, Julio Rodriguez, a line shot home run. His second home run of the spring. It comes with JP aboard, and the Mariners have a very quick 2-0 lead here in the top of the first inning. What a bolt by Julio.
Yeah, Dylan Moore hit a home run as well. Casey Lawrence had five strong innings, only allowed two runs. He could be one of those guys we'll see at some point this year if anything else happens in the rotation. But now it's a day off today. Real games tomorrow. Ben Gibbard with the national anthem, Brock. Nelson Cruz throwing out the first pitch. He's going to join us beforehand at 9:30 tomorrow. Should be pretty good. Double Mitch Witch for me at 5 o'clock.
Is the bunting going to be out?
The bunting will be out.
The bunting will be out.
Big day for the bunting.
I think you and I will have a very, very similar image embedded in our head when we look back at spring training 2024. And no, it's not Perry Hill laying on your father teaching him infield drills and techniques. Actually, it wasn't your dad. It was your buddy's son. It was walking into and listening to Julio hit. And, you know, maybe we shouldn't have even been there. Probably shouldn't have been. But just, you know, we happened to go back there. Your mom does a little heart thing when she sees Julio, which warmed Mora's heart. And then that blast that he had.
120 miles an hour.
And who knows if those metrics are right or not or whatever it was. But that might be the image.
520 feet or whatever they said it was.
Yeah, it was over 500 feet, over 125 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And listen to Passan yesterday, amidst many commentaries he had, that's the one thing he said. I expect more power from Julio. A story's incoming from Jeff that he's equally excited about, sharing with everybody that he's doing on Julio, a background. But if he adds power, that kind of 40 to 45 home run power, Salk, that stardom takes another step.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Conversation about Jamal Adams returning. Mike McDonald hinted at it yesterday, so John Schneider has as well. Brock, you've obviously heard some of that. By all accounts, football ops guys have always wanted to make him a linebacker, so be another chance to make that happen. For me, I think I would just want to try this another way. That's where they're at with Jamal Adams. Meanwhile, we're going to talk to Sam Howell here in about 10 minutes. Looking forward to it. Mike McDonald, new coach, pretty clear on what the roles will be for his quarterbacks.
Yeah, you know, like a number split on snaps. You know, I don't know. I mean, but it's going to be your conventional. We'll see what Ryan thinks and what's the right split. But, yeah, Gino's going to go into camp. He's the starter. And really excited about that. But then, you know, obviously Sam needs a lot of reps, too, as well as if there's a third quarterback on the roster. You know, those guys got to develop as well. So we'll figure out the right mix. And again, I mean, everybody on the team, we're all, I mean, we might not be competing for 1 and 2, but those guys are going to be getting after it every day to develop and bring the team along and compete with themselves to try to make them the best player they can be. So that's what we expect.
I'm going to guess when we talk to Sam Howell in 10 minutes or so, we're going to walk away and go, that guy's pretty mature.
Mm-hmm.
Can't believe he's that young, because he's seen a ton, man. He's seen huge expectations, supposed to be, you know, one of the top 10 picks in the draft and everything else, carry North Carolina in so many different ways, saw change there, goes to Washington, sees significant change there, ownership change, coordinator change. Like, the guy has already gotten a pretty good feel at a young age how tumultuous the position can be, the sport can be, the coaching can be. I think in 10 minutes we'll walk away and go, yeah, man, this guy's pretty darn mature, already been through a lot, and has no, you know, beef with that. Yeah, Gino's a guy. Gino's a starter. He's established, been in the league 10 years, and I'm going to come in and compete and make sure I'm ready to go if and when something were to happen to Gino.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, just a couple of days after Troy Dannon left Washington in the lurch, they brought in his replacement. Familiar name, Wazoo AD Pat Shunn, going to move across the state to take over on Montlake. Kind of a weird situation because he's essentially been at war with the school for the last year or so. So, Brock, what happened?
Well, I think what happened is I said to you, you have to have somebody with background. You cannot go from the outside again. And Troy Dannon was from the outside. He was a Northern Iowa guy via Tulane to Washington. Names like the guy down at TCU and others that have been good athletic directors, that was just not, to me, the route with this kind of instability you could go. you'd have to go with somebody that knows all the ins and outs. And while he's been on Salk on the other side of the Cascade Mountains, the guy knows where all the bodies are. The guy knows where all the skeletons are. The guy knows Jen Cohen and has a tremendous, both sides, tremendous amount of respect for her over the last 6-7 years as they had been on the job together in the state trying to salvage the conference, which ultimately could not and did not happen. It was a 6-year deal. They're paying him unbelievably well. He comes to the Big Ten, the place he wanted to be. He got passed over at Ohio State. And I'm not going to say this is a dream job, but this is a big market in a big conference in the Big Ten. And those things were critically important to Pat Chung.
All right, that's everything you need to know. You were saying yesterday that Coug fans that you're friends with are kind of freaking out.
Yeah, this is personal. Right? What happened in early August was professional, just sabotage. Right, I mean, that was professional, that was big business, that was networks, that was conferences, that was so many different things. That was a professional level of sabotage. Mm-hmm. Yeah, hearing from some of my friends, especially when that news came out, it was a personal, just emotional sabotage. That, as you just referenced right there, the guy that, you know, for the last year has gone after this president, gone after this school, gone after the role that they played in the decimation of their program and in the conference, to now come back on this side of the mountains, it was a very, very difficult pill to swallow.
Interesting.
And I get it. I get it. It's really hard. Really, really hard. Really brutally hard to see everything fall apart, you know. And this did start with USC and UCLA. You know, that's where this whole thing started. The momentum started, the snowball, and then ultimately the avalanche that cost them and the Beavers more than anybody else.
Well, did they have some expectation that Pat Chung was supposed to stay?
No, I don't think stay. I think had he gone to Ohio State, and I don't want to speak for every Cougar friend and fan and everything, but you know, had he gone to Ohio State or somewhere in the Big Ten, I think there would have been an understanding. Like Kyle Smith, do you expect Kyle Smith to stay, you know, in the West Coast Conference versus Stanford? No, but to go across the state to this school that played such a active role in it in their minds, and then you know, just the things that Pat has said about the school and the business of it all. That's the pill that was really hard to swallow. Go anywhere else. Go anywhere else. Just don't go to that school. It was certainly the sentiment that I felt for many of my friends.
All right. Well, I'm still not sure I understand it, but I'll live to fight another day, I guess.
Yes.
I understand why Coug fans are mad. I understand that your program's been taken away, and I think it's awful and rotten, and you have every right to be mad for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I understand the frustration with this move in particular, but that's fine. All right. Let's talk to Sam Howell. I'm really excited about this. I want to get to know this guy, who he is, what he's looking to do here in Seattle, what it looks like for him to try to compete for a job here.
Was he on
the Seahawks
honeymoon
team?
Too, when he heard the trade?
I have to imagine.
Walk over and tell his wife in the hot tub, honey.
I think that's
we've
a
been
rule.
Traded.
Yeah, that happens for everybody now. All right, Sam Howell joins us next. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Well, everything's going to look different this year for the Seahawks, that we know. And one of the new faces is quarterback Sam Howell. Arrives from Washington and he joins us right now here on Brock and Salk. Sam, good morning. Welcome to Seattle.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you, guys. Yeah, just happy to be on, happy to be a Seahawk.
From Washington to Washington. I mean, make sense of that, right? I mean, obviously D.C. to Washington State, but just a little crisscross in the country. Can you take us back to the day that you heard that this trade was going to happen and you'd be now in Seattle?
Yeah, I had no – it was a couple of days before the trade announced that I kind of knew that they were kind of listening to trade offers. And the GM in Washington, Adam Peters, was very good to me and kind of kept me in the loop the whole time. And Adam knew that Seattle was a place that, you know, I was interested in going. And obviously, you know, he's going to take the best offer at the end of the day. But, yeah, he just gave me the call and let me know. And just super thankful to those guys in Washington. They were very professional the way they did their business. And I'm just happy to be a Seahawk.
Why was it a place that you were interested in going?
Yeah, I played. We played there last year. So I love the organization. I've heard a lot of really good things about the organization. And you know, it's just a really fun place to play. And I spent a few days in the city last year when we played out there, and it seemed like a cool place to be. And I'm just excited for a fresh start. And yeah, just, you know, opportunity to, you know, be behind Geno. I got a lot of respect for Geno. So I'm really excited about it.
Sam Howell here with us. A couple years ago, there was a pretty significant QB trade in this market, so we've gotten to know trades. And you said something there that piqued my interest just a little bit. And I do know that there were multiple teams that were involved in this. So what role do you and your agent play to Mr. Peters out there in Washington and say, gosh, I'd really love if you could find a way to get this done? Do you think that played any role in you ultimately ending up here and not a couple of those other spots?
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I mean, it's hard to know. I mean, I only know so much, you know. Obviously, I don't really know exactly what other teams were offering. And at the end of the day, Washington's going to take the best offer. So, you know, obviously, you know, the teams that I wanted to go to were some of the same teams that were pushing really hard to get me. And you know, Adam just kind of told me at the end of the day, it just came down to, you know, Seattle wanted me more than anybody else. And I'm happy with it. You know, I'm happy to be a Seahawk, and I'm just excited to get started here pretty soon.
What have they told you about your role, about your future here?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, it's just taking it one day at a time. You know, obviously, you know, Gino's still the guy, and you know, I'm gonna try to do everything I can to just come in and work and just try to get better, and try to be a good teammate and support Gino, and you know, do whatever I can, you know, to help the team win. But at the same time, always trying to compete, you know, and always every single time I step on the field, just always trying to, you know, show these guys what I can do and what I'm capable of. But yeah, I'm just taking it one day at a time, not trying to worry too much about the future. I'm just excited to get there and, you know, get to work with new coaches, new teammates. So I'm excited.
How big of a role do you think that game played in Seattle, the Pacific Northwest, where you threw for over 300 yards and 3 touchdowns and played great on that afternoon and nearly beat the Seahawks? Looking back, how big of a role do you think that played for both you and them?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'd probably say a pretty decent role. I think always playing good against, you know, teams that, you know, you might want to play for definitely helps you. And that was definitely one of my better games of the year. So I'm sure it helped a little bit. But, you know, I thought I did some good things last year and definitely showed some ability to play in this league. I'm very thankful that, you know, to John for, you know, reaching out and giving me this opportunity.
Do we know what number you're going to wear yet?
Not sure yet. They were still kind of working through some of those things. So I'm sure as soon as I know, you guys will know.
How do you choose your number? Do you have is there a method to that?
No. I mean, I don't really put too much thought into it. You know, I just kind of, you know, whatever's available. You know, just try to pick one that I think might be the coolest.
So you're not gonna go buy one off somebody.
Nah, I'm not gonna buy one. You know, somebody's got it.
It's too bad. I see you as a number 8. I see you as a number 8, and I know that Kobe's already got number 8, but I kind of see you as a number 8. So I was hoping you were gonna come on today and say, "Yeah, no, I'm gonna buy that off Kobe because it means
a lot." Yeah, Sam, understand that Salk is a big numerologist guy.
Yeah,
and it's a big deal to him. May not be to you,
but look right out there. Look good, feel good, play good, right? And I just want to make sure.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
Yeah,
I'm right there with you.
Okay, good.
I'm not gonna play game though.
Yeah, don't go 6. Whatever you do, don't go 6.
Right.
That never really works for quarterbacks.
Yep.
Hey, you played the Seahawks. Yeah. Did you end up playing Mike McDonald's defense at all in the Ravens, either in training camp, or did you get any feel of competing against your new head coach?
Yeah, so we had a joint practice with the Ravens last year. So I got the chance to go against them, and man, they had a good defense. And Mike was doing a really good job, and obviously, you know, they had a lot of success. Not only last year, but all the years he was there, and it was just fun to watch. He does some really good things from a pressure standpoint that make it really hard to, you know, from a quarterback perspective of picking up protections and knowing which way to slide the protection. And they're always really good at disguising things and kind of showing the opposite of what they're going to do. So I'm excited to play with him, and I know for sure we'll have a good defense.
Yeah, I love that. So if you wouldn't mind, Sam, just a little compare and contrast. You got to play against a Seahawk defense. It was different, right? They were not as much disguised. They were not as aggressive and everything else. And then a Mike McDonald in a Baltimore system that everything you laid out. Just kind of compare and contrast maybe what you played against last year and what Seahawk fans can expect to see from a Mike McDonald defense this year.
Yeah. I mean, obviously I don't want to speak for coach, but, you know, I think, you know, they'll probably do a little bit more in the pressure world. The Seahawks, they did pressure a little bit last year, but I think you'll probably see a lot more disguising. I think the players will probably enjoy it more than the scheme they played last year, and I think it would give them more opportunities to be successful. But I don't know. We'll see how it goes. And you know, we haven't really talked scheme or anything, and I'm sure we'll learn pretty fast as far as what they plan on doing and the direction he wants to go. But whatever he decides to do with the defense, it'll be really good.
I don't want to put you in a bad position. We're talking to Sam Howell. I don't want to put you in a bad position in talking about the city and the organization that you came from. But from the outside, the lawsuits and the environment and everything else we've heard about the Washington organization makes it sound, I'll use the word, challenging. Was it? Are you, you know, is it important for you to get that fresh start and kind of try it in a different style of organization?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say this. I'll say what my time in Washington, I wasn't really there for most of whatever was going on with, you know, the former owner. All I can say is one, the new owner, Mr. Harris, bought the team. It's been completely different. I think that the organization has gotten so much better, and they're working hard every single day to try to improve it and try to make it better for everybody, you know, the players, the staff, and I'm forever thankful for my time over there in Washington. But that being said, you know, Seattle is a great organization, and I spent probably one day in the building after I got traded and just talking to people, and it seems awesome. People seem awesome. It seems like a really professionally ran organization, and I'm excited. This is where I get to have my fresh start.
Where is home base for you, Sam? Where do you make home?
Yeah, down where I grew up in Charlotte, North Carolina.
And did you spent much time out on the West Coast, other than obviously a few of the games playing different teams? Have you spent much time out here?
No, not really. I mean, I spent some time in California. I trained for the draft out there in California, but not the Northwest.
So what do we like to do? Do we like to fish? Do we like to hunt? Do we like the outdoors? What are we going to like? You know, I know you got OTAs and everything coming up and workouts in just a short amount of time. What are we looking forward to out here in the Pacific Northwest?
Yeah, I mean, they just say it's really beautiful, and they say there's always a lot of good things to do outside. And so, honestly, you know, I play a little bit of golf, maybe do a little bit of that. And, you know, I fish a little bit every now and then, so maybe I'll pick that back up again. But we'll see. You know, I'm excited. I'm kind of open to anything, and I'm just trying excited to learn more about the city and just find what I like out there.
Julian Love, right? Big golfer, Julian Love. That might be one of your first calls. My understanding is he's a pretty good golfer and pretty into it. So maybe he can help you out on where you want to go and where you want to play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely might have to do that.
Hey, last couple minutes here with Sam. How about the system? Have you gone back and looked at what Ryan Grubb has done? And obviously Michael Penix, the runner-up for the Heisman, had a lot of fun throwing the pill for the last couple of years within this system. Have you started to get any kind of feel and sense for what Ryan's going to do here in Seattle with you guys?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I follow a lot of college football, and, you know, they've had a lot of success at, you know, at University of Washington, so it's been a lot of fun to watch. And, you know, I'm excited to work with, you know, Coach Grubb. And obviously, you know, we haven't really been able to talk about scheme or anything, and so I'm excited to, you know, go and learn and see what kind of stuff they were doing at Washington. Obviously, you know, I can watch it on film, but it's different when you kind of get down and you talk about it and see what they're teaching the guys to do. And so I'm excited about it. You know, I think it'll be really good. I think it'll be fun to play in a college-like offense. Obviously, you know, I'm sure there'll be some pro-style stuff in there, but I think this will be an offense that really suits me, and it'll be really fun to play in.
What do you do best?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I really think I do a lot of things well. I think just my ability to, you know, get in there and just rally a group of guys and, you know, get those guys around me playing to the best of their ability is one of the things that I do really good. Then I just think I'm a competitor. You know, I'm going to do whatever it takes to give my team a chance to win. And, you know, all I care about is, you know, winning, and no matter what it takes or what I have to do to get it done, I'm gonna do it. So I'm just excited that, you know, to learn a new group of guys and go to war with them.
We obviously did our research as soon as the trade went down. We talked to Bram Weinstein, who's as you know, the voice of the Commanders on radio, and great guy and an old friend, and he just raved about you and raved about you know, your ability to do a lot of the things you just mentioned. Said that you got huge upside, and you know, we also asked, of course, about, you know, some of the interceptions and the sacks, both of which led the league last year. How did that come to be? I mean, how did it get away from you late in the year? Was it, is it something that you're working on? What do we need to know about that part of your game?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, the interceptions, you know, got to do a better job. And I think there were some times where we were down in some games and then I was just trying to be a little aggressive. And at times, maybe just trying to do a little too much, trying to give us a chance. But got to be smarter. Got to play smarter football. Got to play winning football. And at times I was doing it, you know, just got to do it at a more consistent rate. And I feel confident about my ability to do that. It's just a matter of if I get an opportunity, I got to go out there and show it.
Last two quick things for me here, Sam. So it's Wednesday, March 27th. When do you guys get to town and get started here on this season?
Yeah, so we'll start April 8th is our first day. So, you know, probably get in town a few days before that just to get situated and everything. But it's coming pretty soon. I'm excited. I'm just excited to, you know, get to work with this new group of guys, get to work with the coaches. And, you know, I'm just really excited about a fresh start.
And then the last thing is the biggest council. After starting 17 games last year, being in this league a couple of years, now traded across the country, your biggest counsel to Michael Penix. He's got his pro day at Washington tomorrow. All indications he's going to be drafted in the first couple rounds. To the Bo Nixes, the Michael Penix, the Jaden Daniels, to the Caleb Williams, to all these guys, JJ, that now you've been in this league a couple of years, your biggest piece of advice and counsel to those young quarterbacks is what?
Yeah, I would just say, man, just stay confident. And just be yourself. You know, I think all the things that you've done your whole life has gotten you to this point. So don't give up on those and don't try to change to, you know, impress a coach or impress a team. Just continue to be who you are. And everyone's in that position for a reason. So they're all great players. And they'll all have success in the league. You just got to continue to stay confident and don't let one moment, whether it's good or bad, define your career. You know, just keep working every single day and just keep stacking good days, keep trying to get better, and just be a good teammate. I think if you do those things, then it'll work out for you.
If you got to execute one golf shot, we go on a driver, or, it, you know, is it a drive down the middle? Is it a long putt? Is it a, you know, a chip that's got to get it to within a foot or two of the hole? Mm. What's the best shot in your bag?
Yeah, my wedge game is pretty good. Oh. So really 130 yards in the end, and then I'm a really good chipper. So really just – Once I get inside 130 yards or so, I'm a pretty good player. So that's probably what I would say.
What about
still working on the tee shot a little bit? Yeah, not driving the ball well, but once I figure that out, I'll have a chance to be pretty good.
Those are very famous last words. Yes. Once you figure the same here.
Once like
all I got to do is just figure out the driver, and everything will be fine. Sam, congratulations. Welcome to Seattle. We're looking forward to getting a chance to watch you this year, and continued good luck. We'll talk again.
Yes, sir. Thank you, guys.
All right. There you go. There's Sam Howell, new Seahawks quarterback. A lot of great reaction here. Sam reminds me of a humble Brett Favre. That's a good text from the 360. Yeah, there's a bunch of other stuff in here. People want him to go golfing with Jason Myers as well. So
pretty mature guy. Huh?
Yeah, sounds like it.
Pretty mature.
Yep.
I hear some Sam Hunt. When I think Sam Howell, I think, I don't know. Do you, Justin? Do you think a little Sam Hunt, a little country music there in Charlotte, driving his truck around, heading out to Pinehurst, play a little golf?
I don't know who Sam Hunt is. I thought you meant Joey Hunt. Little Joey Hunt?
I know you don't know.
Little Joey Hunt? Is that what you meant?
No, definitely not. I don't know who that is.
Let's ask Brock football questions instead.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Huard breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Saul.
All right, Brock, question number one. You just heard from Sam Howell. What did you make of him, and what did you make of the comments about, you know, the teams that were interested in him before he ended up?
Yeah, there were multiple teams interested in him, and, you know, it's great to hear it from his perspective as well on his side of the equation and how that typically works, Salk. And I'll go back to 2001, where in that offseason, I knew that I wanted to get traded, that Dilfer was here and Hasselbeck was here, and a path to playing was going to be very difficult. And there were a few different options, and Marvin Demoff, my then agent, kind of went to Seattle and said, I think this is going to be the best fit. You know, can we find a way to make this work? And I am sure that Sam's agent did the same thing, that Sam would really like to. And he said a few things there. This system fits me. This is a college-style system. Will it adapt to the NFL? Absolutely. But is it a speed and space system that he thrived in at North Carolina? And 100%. So, and if you looked at the situation, and you're Sam Howell too, with a few of these other teams and maybe the dysfunction of a few of these other organizations or an established starter in one of these other organizations, you looked at this and said, that's where I want to go. Mm. And both sides made it happen, and Seattle, you know, had to probably sweeten the deal a little bit. If you wondered why that third rounder was in there, that's why. And it wasn't one team that was interested, and it wasn't two teams that was interested. There were three teams, as I, or more, that were interested in his services, and thus you had to give a little bit more to make sure you get that guy here for the next couple years.
All right, question number two. Why are we still talking about Jamal Adams as a possibility for this year?
Well, there was a little anecdote yesterday as our buddy Brady Anderson, who we're going to chat with in 45 minutes, was sitting there at the table. Mike McDonald, John Schneider, Dave Pearson, Diamond Dave looking good as well at the breakfast table there in Orlando at the owners' meetings. And he talked about his linebackers have to be great blitzers. Got to win one-on-ones. How many times do we say that? My job is to get you a one-on-one. Your job is to win it. And you heard it from Sam. That was a great explanation. Mike McDonald's defense. It's hard to go against. It disguises. There's an illusion of pressure. Then there is pressure. And their guys are really good at getting home. And that is the one thing. If you're going to play Jamal Adams and you're going to say, listen, Jamal, you're a linebacker. And in this system, this is what you're going to be asked to do. And you're going to have to blitz. And you're going to have to beat those blocks. And you're going to have to beat those guys one-on-one. Can Jamal Adams do that? Is that the strength of his game? Well, when healthy, yes. It certainly wasn't going backwards. It was in some space, and it was getting to the quarterback. Set a record, you know, obviously as a secondary player, an all-time NFL record with all his sacks the first year when he was healthy. And when healthy, and we're talking about a minimum deal, by the way. You're not talking, look at the market. The market has spoken to Jamal. He's not signed anywhere else. So you're talking about a very low-risk deal to see if that guy, when healthy, can still pressure and blitz and win one-on-ones. That's why I think he's still intriguing to Mike McDonald and his staff.
All right, question number three. UW Pro Day coming up. What are you watching for? What are you listening for?
A couple guys that I'm kind of curious and interested in. Well, I talked about Braylon Trice yesterday in my draft profile. Will he try to better his 4.7 time at the combine? Will he try to jump a little bit better? Has he added a little weight? Has he cut down for the combine? You know, does he add weight and not do any of the speed stuff and just simply bench press and do some of the strength things? Kind of got an eye on Braylon. Jack Westover didn't do much. Invited to the combine, was fighting some injuries, so he didn't do anything. Is Jack Westover healthy enough? And he will be in one of my draft profiles coming up. Just a little teaser there, because that dude, when Ryan Grubbs said had the best hands on the team, and I looked at him, I said, what? Roma Dunze, Jalen McMillan, Jalen Polk? Best hands on the team. And then he went out and made catch after catch in critical, huge moments, third downs, Apple Cup, you know, big, big time moments and games. I'm curious if Jack Westover is healthy. And then lastly, will Michael Penix run and jump? If you were advising Michael Penix, and first of all, you advised him last year and told him, don't come back to school, go right to the league.
Yep.
He came back to school, benefited himself, made a lot of money, runner up to the Heisman, and stock-wise probably helped himself. But if you're advising Penix today, Salk, you're his agent, do you run and jump tomorrow? Do you go out there and try to run a 4.6 40? Do you go try to jump 35 inches? If you're capable of doing it, why would you not? Well, I don't want to answer it. What would you advise?
I don't know. That's a really good question.
Yeah.
I hate to give you a bad answer.
Yeah.
I don't know that because I don't know what he's capable of. I don't know what would really help him.
That's right. I think that's fair.
I mean, I guess I would do it just to show that I'm not hurt, that I'm not going to, like, fall down and break my leg while running.
That's right.
Like, but to I don't me, know if it really helps.
That dude was just a dynamic athlete before the litany of injuries. And he became a real pocket guy and became a surgeon in that pocket, right? Just throwing guys open, as Joel Klatt said to us the other day, counting cards, reading leverage, just attacking it. But if you're capable of doing it, and maybe, again, this is a bias for me because I know when I was coming out of school, QB coach for the Seahawks said, bro, go and run. You know, in fact, kind of a, you know, it's a sunny day. Take your shirt off. You know, show Coach Holmgren that you're an athlete, that you actually have muscles, that you're, you know, not just some stiff in the pocket. Michael Penix, you're a great athlete. If you can run 4.6 and if you can jump 35 inches, go do it. Go do it. I think it would only benefit him to say, wow, this dude is a lot better athlete. He just kind of keeps it all, never really steps on that gas and kind of keeps it all confined because he protects himself. But when he has to, the guy is still capable of being a dynamic runner.
All right, good stuff. That is today's Blue 88. A lot of text. Salk, we need to lean on your creativity. From the brain that created the award-winning No Way Jose campaign, we need a similar catchphrase to say no to the Jamal Adams idea. That from the 425. 253, Jamal equals no. Regardless of skill set, he has shown his inner self. They wrote shelf, but I think they mean self.
Do you remember Bill Schwartz's great campaigns for the No Way?
Of course I do. Yeah. No way, Jose. No way, Jose. Yeah, of course I do. That was a great campaign.
Yeah, it sure was.
It was time to remove Jose Lopez. It was just unfortunately for him, his time had come.
And it sure feels like it's time to move on from Jamal. Next. I totally understand that those sentiments on the text. But at the same time, this is a new regime.
No way, Jose. No way, Jose. No way,
we still have those in here. Yeah, we actually ran commercials. People might not remember there were commercials for that.
It's time for change. Change at the Mariners Hot Corner.
Incumbent Jose Lopez had his chances to be Seattle's full-time third baseman,
but failed to deliver with men in scoring position.
That's a problem.
Made base-running mistakes and blunders in key situations.
Would you believe it?
Vote yes on Proposition 6-4-3.
Say no way, Jose.
I'm Mike Salk, and I approve this message. Paid for by the campaign to make sure Jose Lopez is not back as Mariners third baseman.
Wow. Wow. That's one of like five of those that we ran. There's an initiative. There's E5. That's another one. Yeah, maybe I can play you those another time.
We're in Justin's face right now.
He's like, what used to happen on this stupid show? Yeah. just an average day in the old Brock and Salk show. Jose Lopez is that bad, though. Let's be clear. There was a good reason for it, man. They could not bring that guy back. He was a problem at that point. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come right back. Brady is going to join us at 8:30. We'll talk Cougs with Kyle Brown at 9:30 this morning. Brock's got another draft profile. We're going around the NFL. Jeez. We're getting ready for opening day. It's Brock and Salk, CL Sports on 710CLSports.com.